Welcome to Falun Dafa Information Center's new show, the Falun Gong Bulletin, where we cover news from China and offer our insight and analysis on why it matters, even to us here in the West. I'm Ben Maloney, Digital Outreach Director for Falun Dafa Information Center.
And I'm Cynthia Sun, News Editor at Falun Dafa Information Center.
On today's episode 3, we're going to cover Chinese video surveillance tracking of Falun Gong practitioners through Hikvision, a new bill passed in Canada to address forced organ harvesting, a family rescue update about London designer Amy Yu's mother, and we'll wrap up today's show by talking about a deep dive into one of the largest civil disobedience movements in Chinese history. To start off today's show, why don't you take us through some of the news items, Cynthia?
Sure. The first news item is about Hikvision. It's the largest video surveillance company in the world. Last year, research firm called IPVM, or the Internet Protocol Video Market, discovered that this Hikvision, the Chinese surveillance giant, was creating alarms to notify police in China about Falun Gong practitioners. There's thousands of these video cameras like on streets all over China, and every time they notice or pick up that there's a Falun Gong practitioner, they will notify police and alarm them. And practitioners have actually been arrested because of these alarms. IVPM actually found this on Hikvision's own website for so-called smart policing software. Not only Falun Gong, these technologies can track other groups that are considered dissenters by the Chinese Communist Party to achieve this suppression. The United States and the United Kingdom have recognized their efforts, and November 2022, Hikvision, along with WeChat and Huawei, were actually banned from the United States and the United Kingdom for national security threats. And so this is really intersection between human rights and national security.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This is a quote from Senator Rubio here, who obviously has done a lot with CECC. Mm-hmm. Technology is playing a central role in enabling the Chinese Communist Party's human rights abuses and genocide against groups such as Falun Gong. And I think it's interesting for a few reasons. Number one is, you know, Hikvision is an international company, a private company, right? So it's a private company, you know, trying to do business all around the world. Right now, actually, although they can't import the cameras, if we go on Amazon, we could buy a Hikvision camera. And so when we start talking about these private Chinese companies, I think it's very interesting to note that, are they really private? Because look at how Hikvision was built. Do people really think that they have this Falun Gong keyword because they want to do that? No, it's their business because the Chinese Communist Party requires it. Yeah. And so when you look at all this software that's actually being used for gross human rights abuses, we should say this is not some innocent alerting police, right? When they alert police, that means that person's getting rounded up. They're getting put into maybe a labor camp, maybe being tortured, maybe being killed, right? So it's they're actually aiding in gross human rights violations, this technology company. And so there's a big debate now about like TikTok, for instance, which is not, you know, part of this. But when you're a Chinese private company, quote unquote, you're really at the behest of the Chinese Communist Party.
Hikvision was so popular. It was basically like Ring, which is on, you know, the houses of thousands of Americans. You just put a security camera so you can like see if anyone's going to steal your Amazon packages. It's a civilian use item. It's a product that is marketed towards civilians, but actually the United States noted that there was danger in having these, you know, Chinese state-run, state-like subsidized companies like Hikvision on the homes of Americans and in the communities.
Yeah, a little bit like a Trojan horse, right?
Right. And so in 2023, the Falun Dafa Information Center is looking forward to more research about Hikvision and other surveillance technologies that are currently used to persecute Falun Gong practitioners in China. As we know, lockdowns have ceased, and so a lot of Falun Gong practitioners are able to disseminate flyers again out in the open, but there's a lot of consequences that come into play when you consider all of the different factors that are going on right now in Chinese society.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see 2023.
Yeah. Good news. The second news item talks about a bill in Canada called Bill S-223, following the United Kingdom's bill last May to address forced organ harvesting, Canada passed a bill December 14th to take measures against forced organ harvesting and address the concerns that UN experts leveled against China's live organ harvest evidence in 2021. So this bill, S-223, is also called Trafficking in Human Organs Act, and it blocks foreigners from entering the Canadian borders if they're involved or complicit in organ trafficking. And quote, bans Canadians from traveling abroad to receive an organ transplant without the informed consent of a donor or someone authorized to give consent. And so it doesn't explicitly say that this is targeting the Chinese Communist Party or China's forced organ harvesting, but China is currently the biggest black market for organs, and they're the most well-known. This will really help stem the flow of so-called organ tourists to go to China and be the, you know, the cash cows to this horrendous crime that has been going on for two decades now. We're really looking forward to how this will play into, like, in practice, because it was just passed in December, and so far, no one has been banned from coming into Canada's borders. But if Canadians in the future want to get unauthorized organ transplants, they'll get a maximum penalty of 14 years in prison in Canada. So I expect this will be, you know, a really big red flag and a warning for people who want to go to China and get their organs, because now there's a lot of awareness about it. So there's no excuse like, oh, I didn't know that this was from a prisoner of conscience.
Prisoner of conscience, yeah. Who's not giving consent.
The third news item is a family rescue update. It's really important because we have a friend called Amy Yu. She's in London as a fashion designer. And for years now, she hasn't seen her parents. But her mother, Wang Meihong, is a 65-year-old. She used to be a geological engineer in Heilongjiang province, and she was arrested in 2020 for talking to people on the streets about Falun Gong. And since then, Amy hasn't heard any updates about her. But recently, we've actually gotten updates. And although horrific, we really wanted to tell the world about it. For the past 3 years, all of her family in China have been denied family visits to the prison. And they haven't gotten any phone calls at all. Recently, her husband, Amy's father, Mr. Yu, called the prison, and a prison guard confessed to her father that Mrs. Wang was often screaming in the middle of the night, and her husband suspects that it was torture. The guard also confessed that she was recently sent to a solitary cell. These solitary cells are usually for punishment, mainly for when Falun Gong practitioners refuse to renounce their faith. And so that way, prison guards are able to inflict more torture, electric batons, waterboarding. They have like a tiger bench where they stretch the limbs out until like it feels like you're dying. And there's a lot of different torture methods that are used in these solitary cells. And so Amy's mother, unfortunately, is in that situation right now. And so we wanted to update, you know, the governments, and we wanted to update the world about this so that at least there's more awareness about what's going on. And so if you're in London, you can contact your representatives to tell them about Mrs. Wang Meihong's case, about Amy Yu's mother. At the beginning of the year, especially because now we're close to Chinese New Year, a lot of these prisons actually give bonuses to prison guards for as many practitioners as they get to renounce their faith, they get that many bonuses. And so we suspect that she was probably put in this solitary cell so that the prison guards can get their bonus, can successfully transform her.
It's not even just that. I was reading a story of another victim testimony, not hers, and one of the guards' wives was a Falun Gong practitioner. Mm-hmm. And so when this Falun Gong practitioner was being tortured in jail, all the guard did was, like, I think lightly suggest, we shouldn't torture this person anymore, like they're so bad. And because of that, they lost their opportunity for a promotion. The whole society is being sucked into this crime against humanity, all of Chinese society. But even, you know, when the guards try to offer some leniency or do something that's remotely human, mm-hmm. not only do they not get bonuses, but they might get penalized, actually. So there's this whole kind of structure of reinforcement to not actually speak out. It's very evil. It's actually a really good segue in today's deep dive, actually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like Amy Yu's mother was arrested for talking to people on the street about Falun Gong, an interesting question to think about is, what would you do if you had no freedom of speech? It's a very weird question to ask in the United States, where we have a Bill of Rights, we have a number of media, independent media, right? So you have a number of ways to get your voice out and voice heard. This is not true in China, of course. And this is also a question that millions of Falun Gong practitioners have been trying to answer for 20 years under the brutal persecution. And the answer that they came up with started one of the largest civil disobedience campaigns in world history. And so if we take a step back and we look at kind of the global precedent for civil disobedience or peaceful resistance to brutal persecution, you see, you know, MLK is a good example in the U.S., dismantling Jim Crow laws with peaceful resistance, protests, you know, rallying people. Gandhi in India got India's independence through peaceful means. And so, you know, changing the hearts and minds through peaceful means is something that Falun Gong practitioners have been doing for decades in China. And what's interesting is how this kind of started, because it's actually the largest information network, sort of independent journalist network by number in China, getting information to the Chinese people and also getting information out of China, such as about COVID and other things we can talk about. So it's a very important movement. This network inside China, Falun Gong practitioners, happened very organically. So essentially what happened is, in the beginning, you know, 100 million Falun Gong practitioners in 99, one out of every 13 people, government's promoting it overnight, kind of totally reversed, right? Brutal persecution that starts with massive propaganda campaigns. So one day they're promoting the practice, saying it's good for health. The next day they're saying it's evil. These people are evil. They're doing all this stuff. So obviously when you're caught in that, what do? Right? You're like, well, that's not true. Like, I practice Falun Gong, or my mom practices Falun Gong, and it's a good thing. And how do you tell people? Because the second you go outside, or the second you try to do anything, go appeal in Tiananmen Square, go, you're thrown in a van, and you're getting these long prison terms, or you're not heard from again. And so Falun Gong practitioners kind of organically started figuring out, okay, well, I'm going to make a sticker or a banner, and I'm going to go and I'm going to, you know, place that in my town so people can see Falun Dafa is good. That sort of organically grew, and it could be a really old practitioner or a young practitioner. They started at home, like on a home printer, printing out flyers like on a piece of paper like this. And then in the dead of night, going around to their neighborhood and kind of dropping it on doorsteps and letting them know, here, like, this is how we're going to debunk the propaganda against Falun Gong. They're lying to you. This is not true, right? But then over the years, what's interesting is that the type of material that Falun Gong practitioners have disseminated in China has kind of grown, and the kind of the network become a little bit more sophisticated. Today in China, Freedom House says there's about 20 to 40 million active Falun Gong practitioners participating in this kind of network within China to let their fellow citizens know the truth. And there's about 200,000, Minghui estimates about 200,000 of these material production sites. So, you know, somebody might have a few printers at home and they're kind of producing for maybe a few practitioners. So this is obviously at risk of Falun Gong practitioners' own lives, because the CCP wants to know where these sites are, and they'll raid them, and then they'll arrest people, and often brutal torture, more so for the people that are running these sites. If we take a step back, I think it's important to give a broader view of sort of some of the material that Falun Gong practitioners are actually disseminating both inside and outside of China now through this network, this 20-40 million Falun Gong practitioner network in China. So again, it started just about kind of debunking the lies of the propaganda. The CCP. But then it kind of grew, and now you have about six types of information that Falun Gong practitioners are disseminating. The first is the lies, as I said. Second is a book we'll talk about called The Nine Commentaries in the Chinese Communist Party, which relates to the Tui Dong Quit Chinese Communist Party movement, which is very important, which talks about kind of the history of the CCP. It actually gives Chinese people the real history of the CCP and all the evil things they've done. Third is how to jump the firewall. So Falun Gong practitioners actually created the couple different types of software to break through the Great Firewall. And it's the number one software used, not only just by CCP, it was used in Arab Spring, for Chinese citizens to actually find out real information from the West. Obviously not just about the persecution of Falun Gong, about anything that the CCP is lying about. The fourth is actually COVID information, which isn't necessarily about Falun Gong, but both getting information out about COVID, like one of the earliest reports about Fengbing in China, getting the COVID information, what's really going on in Wuhan, or information within China about they're lying to you or these lockdowns or these different things. The fifth is human rights documentation. So a lot of the information Ming Hui, for instance, gets from on-the-ground sources in China helps solidify things like Amy Yu's mother's case is a good example. You know, obviously that one's easily traceable. It's Amy Yu, then her father calls. But a lot of times these are like kind of undercover. Practitioners can't let know their identities, but they're finding out, was there a death, and tracing it and figuring out, you know, and reporting that back to the West. A lot of the lists that, for instance, our organization will provide to the government of who's responsible for organ harvesting or torture, those lists are coming from those networks. So they're doing that. And then the last, Falun Gong practitioners letting the Chinese people know actually how the CCP is being viewed by governments internationally. So the international sanctions that are happening, we talked about recently on the show, maybe some of the laws that are being passed, because the CCP is obviously, you know, posturing to this to Chinese people, kind of everyone thinks we're great, and that's obviously not true. So it's all this information that the Chinese people have no access to. So why is this important that Falun Gong practitioners have started this network and continue this network? It's important for a few reasons. I think if you use the juxtaposition to the Nazi crimes, right, and the, how all of society was sucked into, you know, those crimes against humanity, China is very similar in that, you know, if you look at who's responsible for the crimes against humanity, against Falun Gong practitioners and others, it's all of society. It's the police, it's the 610 office, it's the doctors, it's, you know, the prison guards, it's the police, it's the court systems. All these people are involved in crimes against humanity that they know is wrong. And so when Falun Gong practitioners actually expose that on a local level, for instance, this idea of local shaming, so they will, let's say you're a prison guard, or you're that guard that was complicit or torturing Amy Yu's mother, local Falun Gong practitioners may find out that person's name and their neighborhood, and they may start disseminating flyers specific to that person. Hey, this person's doing this to a 65-year-old woman. And that local shaming has helped, sometimes in small pockets, small degrees, to kind of lessen the persecution in those jails when that's exposed. But that's more of like a practical point of view. There's actually a larger point of view around the fabric of Chinese society being ripped apart through the persecution of Falun Gong. One out of every 13 people practicing Falun Gong, 100 million, was like it was a real big deal. When the persecution of Falun Gong happened, it was like a civil war, right? It's very much reminiscent of the Chinese Communist Party, you know, campaigns in the past, where you're turning father against son, neighbor against neighbor, boss against their worker, sister against sister. Really, you're tearing people apart because you're actually making them choose something they can know is wrong or may not know is wrong. For instance, in colleges, the entrance exams could have questions about Falun Gong. Your job may ask you something about that. So you're not even able to say, if you think the sky is blue, you have to say it's red in China, right? Because that's what they do. But even worse than that, they suck people into, the Chinese people, into needing to report on Falun Gong practitioners. Reporting on Falun Gong practitioners means that person could be killed. So it's this like whole society is being sucked into this. The Chinese people had no access to overseas information. These networks kind of helped the Chinese people start to see the true nature of the Chinese Communist Party. So for the Westerners that are listening, it's so hard to put ourselves in that position because it's almost like they have a different reality in China. They're under a different reality. They have no access to information other than what the CCP says. And they started making Chinese people think over these 20 years, is the CCP really good? Do I really want to be a part of this? Am I going to really side with these people that are doing these evil acts that they're lying about? Is that who I am? It led to this book, The Nine Commentaries on the Chinese Communist Party, which exposed kind of the methods, the history of how Chinese Communist Party took power and all the deaths. And to us in the West, we probably know a lot about Cultural Revolution, or you can research it. It's not like that in China. You know, Chinese people, a lot of them don't even know that people died in Tiananmen Square massacre in 89. And that was very recent, let alone what happened in the Cultural Revolution, or, you know, what Mao did and all those things, or let alone the Falun Gong. So they don't have a reality. And so when they started learning about the true origins of the Chinese Communist Party, they obviously knew that it was sort of this parasite on the Chinese people, and it wasn't this great, glorious thing, to use the CCP's words. And what's important about that is it started a movement called Cui Dang, which is basically called Quit the Party. You could call it very symbolic and very meaningful, a global movement, which is helping Chinese Communist Party members or Chinese people around the world renounce the party. And so in China, when you're born into the party, so you might be part of the Young Pioneers or Communist Youth League or actually the Chinese Communist Party, which has the kind of formal membership, but you may not really want to join. It's just like you have to in society, your workplace, everyone joins. This idea of Tui Dong is the idea that people will actually renounce it, and they'll say, I don't want to be a member. I don't actually agree with the CCP. And over 400 million people have done that. Those three organizations, so not just Chinese Communist Party, because 400 million is more than actually is in the Chinese Communist Party. And what that's done is show the world that the CCP actually doesn't have the support in China that people think. And we've seen a couple like instances during the zero COVID of you know, like some protests here and there. The issue in China is that none of those people kind of have access to information for each other. But what Tui Dong shows is that massive amounts of people within China don't support the Chinese Communist Party, actually. And a lot of that information was because of the information that Falun Gong practitioners have helped disseminate, or the software to jump the firewall. How that impacts the West, it impacts the West in a lot of ways, because the Fong Bing is a really good example. Fong Bing is a Falun Gong practitioner who in February and maybe even earlier of 2020 used the software that Falun Gong practitioners developed, was able to get on YouTube within China and post videos to the West of what was really happening in Wuhan. I mean, remember some of those videos, bodies on the streets, crematorium lines, like it was crazy, right? But that was at a time when the CCP was lying and denying things and it's not that bad. And so one of the first whistleblowers was this Falun Gong practitioner using that network created by Falun Gong practitioners to overcome the censorship in China. And that gave the West a lot of information about what was really happening, probably helped inform some of the policy decisions around shutting borders and different things. Fong Bing hasn't been heard from in almost 3 years now. That act is a good example of those networks benefiting the West, because you can look now and there's, you know, a lot happening in China around when they ended zero COVID and infection rates, and, you know, getting real information out of China is almost impossible. And so these networks through Minghui, through Falun Gong practitioners, are essential to learning about what's really happening on the ground in China. And I think when we look at the largest disobedience group maybe in history, 20 to 40 million kind of citizen journalists, you could say, in China of Falun Gong practitioners, it doesn't just impact China, it impacts the whole world. And I think as we can see the people in China not supporting the Chinese Communist Party, if they don't stand for the CCP, maybe the CCP will no longer stand, right? And so I think we're starting to see a lot of changes, and we'll keep everyone updated on some of those updates, especially with the COVID situation, as if the information comes out from those networks. But other than that, thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next time.